Okay, tonight I want to carry on in our series on building the church, and I'd like to take it just a little bit of a different direction tonight and shift gears a little bit. Tonight I'd like to look at the labor force, the laborers specifically. And an important aspect of building is the labor force, and we could run this a lot of different directions. We could look at the laborers and who is gifted for what particular part of the project. We could look at the laborers and their tools. But tonight, specifically, I would like to look at the laborers and safety. Safer America recently published an interactive timeline taking a look at the modern era's most deadliest construction projects. I'd like to read from this a number of interesting statistics. Interesting to note is the seven skyscraper building projects included totaled the least amount of construction worker deaths at just 82. Bridges, which included five projects, followed closely with only 90 worker deaths, although even 90 is still far too many. The article goes on, canal projects had the highest total of construction worker deaths with 163,609 deaths in only four projects. Railway projects also had a large number with 107,000 spread across only, 107,200 spread across only two railroad projects. Tunnel and dam projects recorded a total of 772 and 733 construction worker deaths, respectively. Five other projects, including the Titanic, the Trans-Alaska Pipeline, Los Angeles Aqueduct, the Karakoram Highway, and the Qatar World Cup, have totaled 5,383 construction worker deaths, with 4,000 of those worker fatalities in the Qatar projects. Taking a look at the death rate per 1,000 workers, the Panama Canal is by far the deadliest construction project with 408.12 construction worker deaths per 1,000 workers, a total of 30,609 deaths. On the opposite end of the spectrum, the Chrysler Building had zero construction worker deaths. The other three canal projects included the Erie Canal, which recorded 1,000 deaths from its 50,000 workers. The Erie Canal deaths are attributed to disease from swampy terrain, careless use of gunpowder while blasting, drowning, and frequent canal collapses, which buried workers under tons of rubble. The Suez Canal had 120,000 deaths among its 1.5 million workers during the 11-year excavation project, the most construction worker deaths of the four canal projects. Like the Chrysler Building, which had 3,000 workers and zero deaths, the Eiffel Tower kept its construction worker death toll down to one worker, with much credit going to extensive use of guardrails and safety screens. The other U.S. skyscraper projects included the Empire State Building, which had five deaths among its 3,400 workers during construction. The 1970s World Trade Center construction, which recorded 60 construction worker deaths, the Sears Tower, which recorded five worker deaths in two incidents, and Las Vegas's City Center project, which resulted in the deaths of six construction workers. While canal projects did have the highest death totals, railway projects were probably the most dangerous, recording over 100,000 deaths on just two projects. The Transcontinental Railroad with 1,200 deaths, although this number has never been verified, and the Burma Siam Railway with 106,000 construction worker deaths. This railway was also known as the Death Railway. Of the four dam projects that made the list, the Aswan Dam was the only one that recorded more than 100 deaths, with 500 construction worker fatalities. The Hoover Dam recorded the next highest number with 96, followed by the Grand Coulee Dam at 77 and the Fort Peck Dam at 60. Surprisingly, bridge construction projects have been relatively safe over the course of history. The Brooklyn Bridge recorded 30 construction worker deaths, the highest total of all the bridge projects featured. The Sydney Harbour Bridge in Australia recorded 16 deaths, with only two of those resulting from falls off the bridge. The San Francisco Bay Bridge and the Golden Gate Bridge recorded 28 and 11 construction worker deaths, respectively. The San Francisco Bay Bridge fatalities helped spur the creation of safety nets for use on similar projects in the future. The Golden Gate Bridge was completed just months after the Bay Bridge. Of the 11 fatalities, 10 happened in a single incident when a 5-ton work platform broke. Chief Engineer Joseph Stroff made safety a top concern and spent $130,000 on safety nets. The Golden Gate Bridge was also the first construction site in America that required construction workers to wear hard hats. Finally, the Mackinac Bridge recorded 5 deaths. Those are interesting statistics as we look at these different construction sites that are notable of really human achievement. And obviously what we can gather from that is that construction is very dangerous. I can remember specifically being on a project. It was a really windy day. There was gusts of winds coming in at 50, 60 mile an hour. And on an adjacent job site from us, they were on top of the roof and they were sheeting that roof with sheets of plywood. And as we were on our project working, suddenly there was just this horrendous scream that I'll never forget the sound of that, of how horrible that actually was. And it continued for, I'm not sure exactly how long, it continued for at least a minute, just terrible, terrible screaming. And then suddenly it just stopped. And when it stopped, there was just an eeriness that came because of how bad he was screaming, and then just the silence suddenly, it was just kind of a horrifying sight. A few minutes later, helicopter flew into the job site and the individual was air vacced out. And come to find out that one of those 50 to 60 mile an hour winds had picked up one of those sheets of plywood and had put it into his face and had literally split his face in two. And when he quit screaming, we later found out, I'm not sure that he actually lived. And that was an experience being on a construction site that I don't think I'll probably ever forget that. As me and my laborers looked at each other and just the sobriety of that moment, knowing that when that screaming stopped, it more than likely meant something really bad had happened. And so we know that construction is extremely dangerous. I could go on and on with a number of different construction stories where there was an injury occurred, and it's something that can happen fairly often. When we think of the consequences of being hurt or killed on this building project, it should be extremely sobering. The thought of us, of one of us being injured or killed should be an extremely sobering thought as we think about the eternal consequences of that ending in hell. And that if we are not faithful until the end, that death is not just a physical death, but it will be an eternal death. And so there's a real sobriety that comes upon us with that. Accidents happen. We know that accidents happen. But I think that it's really important for us as we labor on this and on any job site, it's important for us to be able to identify certain aspects of that project that we need to specifically watch out for. We need to be careful in these areas. We need to be careful that we're paying attention in these areas, because if we're not, these are parts of the project that can be really, really dangerous and we can be hurt. And so as we begin projects, it's always nice to be able to walk around with the employees. And if we know something that is dangerous, to be able to point that out. And so tonight I'd like to consider some of the ways we can get hurt or even possibly killed and what we can do to stay away from this. OSHA has its list of fatal four, and I'd like to read that list. The number one on this Fatal Four list would be falls. Number two, being struck by an object. Number three, electrocutions. Number four, caught in or caught between a piece of equipment or something that crushes you or runs over you or pinches you in between something. These are the four top causes for fatalities or major construction injuries. And tonight I would like to look at four areas that I believe are specific for our brotherhood as we move forward in building, four specific dangers that I would like to address and bring our attention to with the hope that we can avoid injury, stay away from injury. I can remember very specifically the seriousness of spiritual death. I remember being in conversation with a sister, and there was a particular brother that I had known for quite some time, and she was sharing with us, me and another older brother, she was sharing with us how this particular young brother had fallen away. And it was a very sobering conversation as we sat there. Again, probably a conversation I won't ever forget. But as she sat there and shared how this young man had turned away and had fallen away, the particular older brother who was there with me, I'll never forget, he turned and he looked at me with a look of kind of almost horror in his eyes. And he grabbed me by the shoulders and he looked me square in the eyes and he said, "Don't ever let go of me. Don't ever let go of me." And it wasn't too many years later that particular brother had completely fallen away and had died, not just spiritually, but also physically. And in that physical state of death, died with very little hope. Had so fallen away from God that there would be very little hope. Now, we don't know, we can't judge, we don't know exactly, but based on the fruit that was there, there'd be very little hope. And I say that because the reality of the danger of walking in this walk is something that is very serious. It's something that as believers and as we move forward in building this church, it's something that we really need to take note of and we need to be very, very careful of. Spiritual death can occur. And we've seen it probably, anyone that's been in the faith for very long at all would be able probably to relate an example or a story or numerous examples. I could go on and on of situations where they started out in the faith and yet today they're no longer with us. They've went back to the world, they've went back into sin, and they were killed. And so I believe that whenever we take on the work of laboring for the kingdom of God and to build the kingdom and expand the kingdom and to grow and to take ground for the kingdom, so to speak, that when we do that, we do become the targets of Satan. And again, that ought to be very sobering for us as we consider that. It shouldn't scare us away from doing the work. I don't believe that we look at the construction project and say, you know, I could smash my finger on this thing. I'm going to shed some blood on this thing. I could possibly get cut on this thing. I can remember a job site where a brother that was working on it put a nail square through his hand and pinned himself right to the 2x4. And there he was stuck. There was nothing to do but pull that nail out. I can remember on that same project, a brace coming off from one of the rafters, and it was a metal brace, and it came down on his head, and before he could even realize what happened, he had so much blood spilling out on that pavement and began to shake so violently that in an instant we didn't know if he was gonna live or not. We grabbed a towel, we put it on his head, that towel was soaked up with blood in just a matter of seconds. And that's the reality of what can happen on construction sites. But I don't think that that is something that we look at and say, well, I could put a nail through my hand. I could have a brace come down on my head. I could get a splinter stuck in to my finger, and so I'm not going to do it. We need to have courage in moving forward with it, but I think there needs to be a humility about us and a recognizing that this is war and that this isn't just a game. But when we take up building the church of God, we are in fact actually declaring war against Satan and his kingdom, the Antichrist. And that's something that we ought to take very, very seriously. So tonight I'd like to look at four areas that I believe are particularly relevant to us as a group that we need to take deep consideration of. I'd like to look at deception. I'd like to look at materialism. I'd like to look at self, and I'd like to look at worldliness as four particularly dangerous areas that have been responsible for the death of many believers who have begun in the faith but were not able to finish it. So, beginning here with deception, I'd like to basically, it's seeing something different than what it actually is. And in a construction site, it might be specifically not seeing the danger or not understanding the danger. Not being able to look at the setting and be able to determine what in this could hurt me or hurt someone else, or what is unstable, what should I do, what shouldn't I do? It's a lack of being able to perceive where that danger is at. It's seeing something different than what it actually is. And in a spiritual sense, we have areas of deception within false doctrine. And when we think about all of the false doctrines, as we've even shared in the prior series to this, when we think of all of the areas of false doctrine that are literally swirling around us today, whether it's in the books that are out there, whether it's in the different sermons that are available, the YouTube videos that are on the internet, there is literally an overabundance of material out there that is just completely false doctrine. And if we fill our minds or we begin to watch something, even things that appear to be really, really good, but yet there's just a few points that are off, and we think, well, we can discern those few points, and in time, maybe we become callous to it. This area of false doctrine, I believe, is a real threat if we are not on our guard, because there's literally an overabundance of it. The majority of material that's out there today is false teaching and false doctrine, and it comes directly from the Antichrist. And so it's something that we really need to take warning of and take account of, is the area of false doctrine. Another area of deception that we can be subject to and prone to if we're not careful is in the area of assuming something without confirming it. It's just real easy to piece together certain pieces of the puzzle and draw a conclusion of what the outcome is or what the end picture looks like without actually confirming the facts. And when we assume these things, we put ourselves in a very dangerous ground. It might seem very legitimate. We might be absolutely convinced of it. In our minds, we can form such a soundproof case that it's obvious. And yet, if we haven't taken the time to confirm the facts, we're on very shaky ground. We're on grounds of deception. We can be easily led astray. The area of gossip. Again, another area. Maybe it's born out of concern. Maybe there is someone who is struggling with anxiety. Maybe it's a certain type of personality that just tends to just, when they're troubled, when they're bothered, they just start to talk to everybody. And pretty soon they're talking here and they're talking there and they're talking everywhere. And because they're in an emotional state of frenzy and anxiety and fear, they're sharing things that from the very beginning aren't right, that aren't true. And then all of us have probably played the telephone game where we start out with a particular phrase at the one end of the chain, and by the time it gets to the other end, it's an entirely different message. And so when you start coupling these things together in this area of gossip, we have to be very, very careful what we're receiving and what we're taking as factual when it's just secondhand information being passed down, or maybe third, fourth, fifth hand information being passed down. When we are, if we are listening to gossip, we are on very shaky ground, and we are subjecting ourselves to the real possibility of being deceived. And deception can bring death. Deception can bring destruction. And so we need to really be careful with this. We need to watch out for this. We can draw conclusions kind of in the same area of assuming without confirmation. We can draw conclusions without hearing the whole story. And again, that probably fits under assuming without confirmation. But we need to be very, very careful that until we have heard both sides of the story, so to speak. In a lot of cases, one side is wrong and one side is right. But until we've heard both sides of the story, we need to be very, very careful drawing conclusions and drawing factual information from only one source of the story. Another point of area of deception can be in the area of drawing conclusions with false information. We need to really be able to verify the facts of what we're hearing. And a lot of times that just takes some extra work, being able to dig in, maybe ask some hard questions, maybe go right to the primary source of where this information is supposedly come from. And a lot of times what we'll find out when we go to the actual source, when we go to the person or the individual that it actually involves, we find out that actually the story is very different than what has been circulated or what has been said. And so, but if we're going to be lovers of truth, we need to be very careful in this area of deception. All of us are prone to these areas of deception, whether it be false doctrine, whether it's listening to something, a sermon or reading a book or watching a video, a YouTube clip, all of us can be subject and prone to deception in these areas. And so we need to be very, very careful. I believe that this is a very dangerous area for us in building. It's an area that Satan is going to come try to destroy us in. We need to be on guard in this particular area. Another area is materialism. And by not paying attention on a job site or by being careless, by becoming complacent or distracted, suddenly the real threat for being injured on that job site greatly increases. If we're just out there on the job site, just walking around, not paying any attention, we're up looking at the clouds and wondering about, just not paying any attention, it's likely that we're going to get hurt. And when we think about the threat of materialism, and what does it do? It specifically distracts us from the work of the kingdom. The cares of this life, the deceitfulness of riches, the lust of other things, it takes our attention away from the kingdom of God, and it places it on an object or on a particular thing that is, in the end, is only going to burn. And suddenly we're up thinking about this at night. We're waking up in the middle of the night thinking about filling it up with gas or changing the oil or what you name it. But it's these material cares that distract us from the work of the kingdom. Maybe it's just an overabundance of work, and maybe our businesses are so busy and there's so much income coming in, we hardly know what to do with the surplus, and there's just these distractions. And suddenly, if we're not careful, if we're not extremely careful in this particular area, we can easily be destroyed. When we think of all the warnings that the Lord gave about concerning money and wealth and prosperity and how the believer ought to handle these types of things, this particular area has killed multitudes of very well-meaning believers, and yet they couldn't handle this great distraction. And so I believe that this is a particular area that is, it causes us to neglect the kingdom. It can cause us to neglect the brotherhood. Maybe our days are so full of meeting with customers and clients and putting out estimates and getting things done that the next thing we know, we don't have time in the evenings, and so we're not able to make it to the brothers' meetings or whatever it is. And there can be a spiritual death that comes by simply just being choked out by the cares of this world and deceitfulness of riches and the lust of other things. I believe it also is just a wasting of our time as we think about what money can buy, what money can purchase, and the entertainment and the leisure and the luxuries and the ease that it can purchase whenever we think about being able to go on vacations and all of these different things. When we think about, and I'm not necessarily saying that taking a break and having a time of rest is wrong. The Lord himself said, to the disciples, come yourselves apart into a desert place and rest a while. There's a time and a place for that. I'm not speaking about that. But I think there's an awful lot of wasting time today on foolish and vain pursuits when men have just an excess of money and they can go out and spend their days hitting a little tiny white ball into a hole in the ground. When we think about the foolishness of it and the waste and the vanity of time, that we have grown men wasting their time instead of being able to sit down and train and teach the young men and raising them up in godly sobriety, out wasting their time as if there's nothing else better to do. That's the best thing that they can find to do with their time. And it's part of the result of having been so successful in life and having so much extra now. And I believe that it actually, it distracts us from the kingdom. It actually makes us almost useless for the kingdom. We can't even hardly think straight because there's so many things to spend our money on and to waste our time on and to foolishly waste it away. And today we see people professing Christians almost living, not almost, but actually living for the next thrill, living for the next fun moment. And their whole life almost seems to be consumed with that next time of being able to have fun. And the whole measure of an evening, the whole measure of a week, the whole measure of a day is not based on the productivity of the spiritual edifying of it, but more so, was it fun? And these are the types of things that I believe actually bring spiritual death and destruction to the laborer who is trying to build a kingdom. We must not become deceived and led astray and distracted by just these material possessions that is so easily for us to come by here in this day and time that we live in. Third area is looking just specifically at self. When we see a laborer on the job site, and we've probably all, those of us that have been in the area of construction, worked around, there's some of these young guys come on the job site, and they're as tough as nails. They don't think that they can be hurt, and it's just real easy for them to walk the ridge up on top, and it never crosses their mind that they could fall 20 feet down and maybe get killed, break a couple legs, break their back, break their neck, break arms, break bones, whatever it is. Never hardly crosses their mind. They just walk up on that ridge as if they just, you know, they're like a rooster up there, and it doesn't even occur to them that they could get hurt. And it's this overconfidence, this disregard for rules, and a disregard for other people that a lot of times accidents come out of that. It's an overconfidence. And when we look at self, when we think about, and this can go in so many different directions, but when we think about just general disobedience or a lack of surrender or a lack of submission, when an individual says no to God, when God is coming and asking you, as we've talked about in other lessons, when God comes and he asks you and he wants you to lay down something specifically, he wants you to surrender this, he wants you to put it down, and you say no. We say no to God. When he asks us to lay it down, we say no. He says, go here, and we say no. He says, lay this down, and we say no. At that point, we're useless. God will only go so far with us. And it's that point of saying no that our usefulness as a laborer is done. You get a guy on the job site that's so confident in his own abilities, and he's there calling the shots, and you say, hey, I want you to do this, and he says no. There's only one thing to do with that guy. You can give him a warning. You can say, listen, this is unacceptable. We got to get this job done, and this is your job. And they say no. There's only one thing to do, and that's to let that individual go. He's not useful for that project anymore. And it's the same way with us in a spiritual sense. When God comes and he asks us to do something and we say no, we're on very, very shaky ground. We are on dangerous ground when we tell God no. God will go no further with us. It's the end of the road at that point. Holding on to things that mean something to us is very, very dangerous when we are called to be laborers for the kingdom. The fear of man. Recently, in considering John Wesley's 22 questions, is there anyone whom I fear, dislike, disown, criticize, hold a resentment toward, or disregard? If so, what am I doing about it? That's incredibly challenging. You know, there's just an awful lot of people today that are being absolutely handicapped and paralyzed as being laborers in the vineyard of God because they are afraid of what other people will think about them. There's a specific point of obedience that God comes and he's asking them to do. A specific duty, a specific purpose, a specific work that he's laying there on the heart. And he's saying, do this. I want you to be obedient in this. And they say no. And it's based upon, it's not just an outright no, but it's more hidden in, but what will they think about me? What will so-and-so say about me? And there can be a myriad of excuses made as to why we are just being disobedient. And you know, when you're on a job site and you got a young guy come up here and there's a job to be done, and maybe it's not a real enjoyable job. Maybe it's not something that everybody looks forward to, but it, nevertheless, it's a job that's got to get done. And you ask him to, hey, you know, we're going to have to get this done tomorrow. And tomorrow comes and it's 7:30, 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock. And the guy, where's he at? He's not there on the job site. You call him up, hey, you going to come into work today? Ah, I got sick last night. Got a stomach ache. What's wrong with you? I'm not feeling real good. I got a headache. And I just didn't think I'd be able to make it today. That's real interesting that certain jobs come up and sickness sets in. And it's the same way in a spiritual sense. Whenever God is coming in, maybe it's something that is not looked upon as real desirable. And we can make excuses for that, and we can come up with all kinds of reasons not to do it. And a lot of times, ultimately, it comes down to maybe fearing man. A lot of times, that's what it can be. It's a real danger for us because this type of labor is not useful on a job site. Area of pride. Again, you think of overconfidence. How many men, how many times on a job site you get a young guy on there and he's overconfident and he's showing off, and the next thing you know, you're having to pull a nail out of his foot or a nail out of his hand, or he's done something and maybe even hurt somebody else. Running a piece of equipment and he ran into something, there was some kind of accident. Maybe no one got hurt, but now you've got a piece of equipment that's damaged because he was overconfident. Selfishness. We can be selfish. We can be jealous. We can be envious. We can be covetous. These are all areas that if we allow into our hearts, that can actually kill us. These are very dangerous areas as we build and as we examine others that maybe are more gifted than what we are. Maybe they have a few more talents. Maybe they're able on that framing, that part of the framing, maybe they're able to articulate that doctrine just a little clearer, or maybe it's in the area of the rafters and you know they live such a godly life. They live such a holy life. They have a humility about them. They're able to control their tongue. They're just such a beautiful, and we admire that in them, and pretty soon maybe we're jealous, maybe we're envious. Maybe there's two brothers that are growing closer and closer together, and we're feeling like we're getting left out. Maybe a brother's being used in a specific way that is really being impactful for the kingdom, and we begin to be a little jealous. We kind of wish we had his gifts and his talents and wish we could maybe do what he does. And these are all areas that can come in into a workforce and a laborer or into a church that actually can begin to absolutely cripple and destroy the church. Being condemning or critical. Being hypocritical. Am I consciously or unconsciously? Another question from John Wesley. Am I consciously or unconsciously creating the impression that I am better than I really am? In other words, am I a hypocrite? That's a very deep question that all of us, I think, would be better off if we would really consider that. Number 7, we could be controlling or manipulating. Or on the other end of the spectrum, we could actually pull away into individualism. Maybe things aren't going exactly how we're comfortable with. Maybe the accountability is getting a little too tight, a little too intense, a little too close to home. And there's a fear of maybe being discovered and being exposed. Maybe there's something there that's working on our heart that we're feeling convicted about. And maybe it's just that the tendency is, you know, I'm just going to pull back here a little bit. I'm not going to be with the brothers just quite as often. I'm going to just have a little of my own downtime, my own time. And we can pull off into individualism. And that's a sign. It's a possible sign that there is something that is going on here that can bring death, can bring destruction, can bring injury. And these are areas that we need to be concerned and pay attention with. The area of worldliness. We can have 1 foot in and 1 foot out. In Revelations 2, verse 14, we read, "But I have a few things against thee, because thou hast there them that hold the doctrine of Balaam, who taught Balak to cast a stumbling block before the children of Israel, to eat things sacrificed unto idols, and to commit fornication." You know, Balaam taught them there that if you really want to destroy them, just get them to mingle. Just get them to mingle. And you know, one of the most dangerous things for us today is to mingle with those who are professing Christians who hold to false doctrines and false teachings. That's probably one of the most dangerous things that we can do. It's one thing to mingle with those of the world who are living godless lives, sinful lives. That's wrong. We are not allowed to do that as Christians. We're to be lights into the world. We are to be witnesses in the world, but we are not to mingle among the multitude. We are not to be a mixed multitude. We are to be a separated people. And when we begin to mingle and mix ourselves with ungodliness, whether it be just outright worldliness or whether it be in the form of religious false doctrines and false teachings, to mingle with those who are not serving the Lord Jesus Christ puts us in an incredibly dangerous place. And I think we're prone to think of worldliness just in terms of entertainment and sports and this kind of worldliness. But there's a real danger of worldliness in mingling and associating with those who are not truly following Christ. And we need to be very careful there in those areas. "Wherefore, come out from among them and be ye separate, saith the Lord, and touch not the unclean thing. And I will receive you, and will be a father unto you, and ye shall be my sons and daughters, saith the Lord Almighty." In 2 Corinthians 6, 17 through 18. We must come out of the world's systems, or we will be killed. This is a danger point that we have to be aware of. We must come out of the world's systems, or we will be killed. Whether that is the secular systems of the political systems, the government systems, those types of things, whether it's the entertainment systems, whether it's the business systems, whether it's the financial systems, or the false religious systems, we as God's people, we cannot have 1 foot in and 1 foot out. If we subject ourselves to this seductive influence and teaching, we will be deceived and led astray. It's happened time after time. And we as individuals or collectively as a group are no different than so many others that we have seen historically and even in the present who have been killed by mingling with the world. We must come out from among them and be a separate people if we are to be effective in building the church of God. This is a very dangerous point that we need to be careful of. Okay, moving on here a little bit. So what are the safety measures we can take to avoid being injured or killed? I'd like to just look at a number of them, and we can kind of move through these here fairly fast. There's 8 different points, and I think we could draw a lot of different spiritual analogies from this, but there's 8 points of safety measures that we can do that will protect us. It will help us to avoid being injured or killed. Number 1, always be alert. We can pray without ceasing. We can fast. We can stay in the Word. We can be sober, we can be vigilant, because your adversary, the devil, as a roaring lion, walketh about seeking whom he may devour. We read that in 1 Peter 5:8. We have our Tuesday morning accountability groups where we can ask our brothers to point out our weaknesses. And this is a way for us to be able to be alert. And as we fellowship throughout the week, and we're talking to one another on the phone, we're gathering on Wednesday evenings, we're together on Thursday nights having topical presentations. There's a lot of opportunity for us as we gather together to hold one another accountable and to ask one another, "Brother, what is in me? Can you sense something in me? Do you see something in me that is marring that image of Christ?" And as we continually work towards advancing into that more and more of that image of Christ, always be alert. Number 2, don't rush your work. Don't take shortcuts. There's just a real temptation on job sites for the construction crews to rush. Maybe it's 4:30 or it's 4:45 and it's just been a long, hard day. It's been hot and you want to get home. You want to get in the air conditioning. You want to cool down. And there's just a real temptation to just get it done there at the very end. And maybe there's just that little bit of sloppiness that can come in there. It's that last 15 minutes of the day that really proves the true character of a man. That when the temptation is so great to rush and you just want to just pick up everything and just shove it in a corner quick and, hey, we'll worry about it tomorrow, and the tools just get haphazardly thrown into the... Or we can be men of character and we can actually put things away where they go, and we can put it away in an orderly way. We arrive the next day, things are neat, they're in order, they're where they need to be, and then we can start the day off right again. There's a real temptation to rush and to take shortcuts towards the end of the day or when in the heat of the day. And I think in a spiritual sense, it would be the same way. We want to grow so fast. We want to make so many advancements. We're so excited about the future. We're so excited about, you know, building this church. We're so excited about, you know, getting things done that we can overlook the critical growth development points that are along the way. And that's a real temptation to get sloppy in those areas. Like, well, you know, yeah, this might need to be looked at, but you know, this is a lot more exciting, so we're just going to invest our energy and time over here. And we can get sloppy and we can get careless, and that's when accidents come. When we begin to become sloppy, when we begin to rush our work, when we begin to, maybe we rush off in the morning without doing our devotionals. Maybe we go to bed at night without having that time with the Lord before we go to sleep. Maybe we're going through the day and we don't have that time to pray without ceasing. We're just going throughout, and suddenly there's a spiritual lethargy that comes upon us, and we just become sleepy, and then we become careless, and pretty soon we're not as sharp and sensitive as what we need to be. Don't rush your work. Don't take shortcuts. It leads to accidents. It leads to pain. It leads to suffering. It can lead to death. Number three, wear the required safety gear. A lot of times, you know, we show up at these sites and they have the sights up or the signs up, and particularly I know going to the landfill, you're taking construction debris there, and one of the requirements is that you put a hard hat on and that you put the yellow vests on. And I always sit there and I think, I don't want to put this thing on because I don't know the guy that wore this thing before me. He might have been just dripping in sweat, and for all I know may have had lice, and I don't want to put this thing on my head. And I've been guilty probably most every time of not doing that, you know. And it's, we might get away with it, you know. You know, what's going to fall out of the sky and hit me in a landfill anyhow, you know, as I'm just out there in the middle of nowhere. I suppose it could happen, but, you know, but that's generally the idea. Well, what could happen anyhow? You know, when that brace came falling down, if we would have had proper helmets on, which we didn't at the time, that injury, that pouring out of the blood would have not happened. And it's just easy. You know, it kind of, it's hot, it's heavy, it doesn't feel comfortable. Who wants to wear this thing anyhow? And it's just real easy to get sloppy in that and say, well, you know, we don't need it. The safety glasses, you know, and it's that moment of not wearing a safety glass that a carbide tooth comes flying off that saw blade and embeds itself right in your eye and you're blind. You know, just little things. Or wearing of hearing protection. Now, I can't hardly hear because I didn't wear the proper hearing protection throughout all those times of running the saws and the equipment. And there's just, it's for our benefit. It's for our protection. Wear required safety gear. Ephesians 6, 11 through 18 speaks about putting on the whole armor of God that you may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. Number four, follow instructions. Be obedient to the word. Resign and submit with joy. We talked about the code book. We talked about being able to show up and do our job the way that the code book says to do it. And we have that relationship with the inspector. Follow the instructions. When we don't follow the instructions, it can lead to accidents. Number five, pay attention to and follow emergency drills. In John 10:5, we read, "And a stranger will they not follow, but will flee from him, for they know not the voice of strangers." And I think that we need to pay attention to that. We need to pay attention to and follow emergency drills. When someone that is of a different voice, when there is someone that is speaking a different language, not obviously in a physical sense, but they're speaking a language that we don't understand this talk. We don't understand what this is. This doesn't set right with us. This doesn't feel right with us. There's something that about this that is not, then we need to take alert to this. And it says we need to flee We need to flee away from these wolves that are in sheep's clothing. We need to go away from them when they are not speaking sound doctrine, when they're bringing in foreign ideas and foreign concepts, and they're bringing in heresies and their own innovations and their own ideas that we talked about early on. We need to flee away from these things and follow the voice of Christ and not the voice of strangers. Watch therefore, for you know neither the day nor the hour wherein the Son of Man cometh. We need to be alert. We need to pay attention to. We need to follow the emergency drills. Number 6, insist upon proper training. We read in Matthew 5, verse 48, be therefore perfect, even as your Father which is in heaven is perfect. In 1 Thessalonians 5, 21, we read, prove all things, hold fast that which is good. Again, it's an area that could be sloppy, but when we are discipling new converts, when we are bringing new ones into the brotherhood, new ones into the fellowship, we must insist upon a true and a thorough conversion. It is not good enough to bring someone to the point of baptism who has not repented of their sins, who does not have faith in Jesus Christ, and because of that, they have renounced the world, they've crucified that old sinful man, and they've put him to death. They've went back and they've made things right where they can, and they're at peace with God. And now because of that, because there's death there, we bury him. But you know, the temptation could be that instead of insisting upon this true scriptural conversion, insisting that old man is dead, it could just be real easy to overlook little things here and there. Maybe it's they have a job that they just can't hardly let go of. Maybe they have a relationship they just can't hardly let go of. And we want to make, this is a special situation. This is a special circumstance. And so we're going to allow this special circumstance, we're going to allow it to be a little different. And we don't insist upon proper discipling and bringing new converts into that point of death so that they can experience the resurrection through the burial into baptism and then the resurrection of the new life coming out of that water as a new creature. Instead of doing that, we get sloppy and say, well, and our emotions get in the way, and we say, well, you know, they're in this relationship over here, and so it's a special situation, and we feel comfortable with it, and so we're going to, and we don't require proper discipleship. And we discussed earlier how in order to be a true disciple of Christ, we must forsake everything. Everything has to go. And the temptation in this day and time is to just allow just a little loophole, a special circumstance. It seems like everybody today has a special circumstance. Everybody has a special situation. That, you know, if you just understood my background, if you just understood my experiences, if you just understood how important this relationship is to me, if you just understood how hard it was to get into this job, if you just understood how difficult it is to get out of this job, there's all kinds of reasons why people can circumvent and take shortcuts around proper training. And you know, when you bring someone on the job site that hasn't been properly trained, properly discipled, properly brought through a true conversion and baptism and the repentance, the whole process, you bring them on a job site and you are setting them up for absolute failure. They're not going to understand it, and it's going to be a short time that they're going to be injured, killed, and destroyed. You can't bring someone into a job site that has not had proper training. And it's an area that we have to insist upon. We cannot get sloppy in this area. Number 7, keep an orderly workplace. Seems fairly simple, but you know, you can walk upon a job site and where there's chaos, and when there's, it's just, your mind just can't hardly process things. And so obviously, likely, you're more prone to being accident. You walk in there where there's 2x4s everywhere, or 2x6s, and they've got nails sticking out of them, and you've got hammers laying around, you've got saws laying around, you've got scaffolding haphazardly put up, you've got equipment over here with the bucket half raised. You got this disorderly array of a job site, and it's likely something bad is going to happen. You know, and if just with a little bit of extra effort, you can clean that place up, you can set it in order, and you've eliminated a numerous amount of possibilities for accidents to occur. And it's the same way in a church. And we're going to talk about the order of a church and making the house a home in a later series. But it says there in 1 Corinthians 14:40, let all things be done decently and in order. And when we come together and we have a godly order about our worship services, we have a godly order in the way we ordain leadership, and we follow the scriptural pattern for that, and our worship services are held in a godly order, our baptismal services are held in a godly order, our weddings are held in a godly order, there's something attractive about that. We have order within our homes. When we get sloppy in all that, and we get careless, whether it's in our clothing, whether it's in our thinking, whether it's in our, you name the different areas that we can become sloppy in. We start getting sloppy in our thinking, and we're going to get injured. We're going to get hurt. We start getting sloppy, and in the way that we handle technology, we're going to get injured. We're going to get hurt. We're going to get killed. And it's no different in this. We need to keep an orderly workplace. We need to have discipline in our life. We need to have discipline in our homes. We need to have discipline in our hearts. We need to be men and women of discipline. And when we can keep an orderly workplace, we reduce the risk of injury. Okay, number 8, monitor safety measures. And I think just from time to time, it's really important for us as brothers to come together in brothers' meetings where we can come together, we can discuss, brothers, how are we doing in meeting those resolutions that we're setting on Tuesday mornings? And brothers, how are we doing in keeping the church in a godly, decently order? And brothers, how are we doing in overcoming sin? And brothers, you mentioned that one struggle that you had. How are you doing in overcoming that particular struggle? And how's this relationship going? Is it improving over here? Has there been some restoration made there? And are you being able to renew and reestablish these things? And brother, how are you coming with those feelings of unforgiveness or bitterness or hurt or whatever it is? It's important for us to come together from time to time and have these brothers meetings and see, how are we really doing as a brotherhood? How are we really doing in overcoming and holding each other accountable and having this accountability with our brothers? And working back through the scriptures and taking note again and watching and examining our lives, has there been any area where we've strayed out of the way? Is there any area where we're not alert? Is there any area where we've become careless? Is there any area in our life where we've just been neglecting? Has there some place where we're just really close to stepping off that wall and being injured? And we need to just go back through everything and just reestablish things and say, you know, brothers, we got a little sloppy here. We need to get that scaffolding shirt up there again a little bit. And you know, notice the other day that bucket was left up a little bit off the ground. And you know, if you walk into that thing and hit your shins on the bottom of that bucket, that's going to hurt really bad. And you know, if we just lowered that bucket, remember to put the bucket down, and we can put the throttle down. We don't have to keep in full throttle whenever we get into it. You know, we can just slow down there a little bit. It's just these kinds of discussions that's gonna add an extra measure of safety and protection to us. It's gonna help us avoid these accidents that otherwise we could become very prone to. So it's important for us from time to time to reanalyze and work through this and just simply see, how are we doing? And then, brothers, we can just from time to time, we can just ask our brothers for help. We can just ask for help. There's sometimes it's too heavy to pick up on our own. There's some jobs that are too big for any one of us as individuals. And we have the opportunity to ask our brother, can you help me with this? And by asking for help, a lot of times, we remove that danger of being injured or killed by simply humbling ourselves and asking our brother for help. I'm excited about it. I'm excited thinking about being able to put some of these safety cautions in place. I'm excited about working on it. I'm excited to think about the divine protection of God as we stay in the order of holiness, as we stay under that protection of being separated from the world. I'm excited to think about God blessing us. I'm excited about accomplishing this and being able to end with that eternal goal of being able to be together and to hear those words, "Well done, my good, my faithful servant." Thanks for listening.